Hello there, my friends. This is Tim Benal of BenalofAmerica.com with another edition of Benal of America Audio Season 2. It is November 25th, 2006, and this week the guest is Bart Sibrel, creator of A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Moon. And we're going to be talking about moon hoax theory. I've always been sort of a skeptic of the moon hoax theory. I'm not a big moon hoax theory enthusiast, but I do recognize its place in the world of the esoteric, and always kind of thought it would be fun to have a moon hoax edition of Benal of America Audio. So we went out and tracked down Bart Sibrel and got him on the show here so we can discuss moon hoax theory from top to bottom and inside and out. Amongst the various aspects of moon hoax theory we're going to be talking about include its history, where to come from. Bart's going to lay out his case for the theory. We're going to explore the three different subgroups within moon hoax theory and find out which one of those three that Bart subscribes to and why he does not give credence to the other two. We'll be talking about rumors of Stanley Kubrick being involved in the moon hoax. Moon hoax theory's place in the world of the esoteric. I like to call it the bastard child of esoterica. We're going to talk about that perception problem facing moon hoax theory. And we got to talk about the Buzz Aldrin incident. 3 years ago, Bart was punched in the face by Buzz Aldrin as he confronted him about the moon hoax theory. It was all caught on video. It made worldwide news. Now, 3 years later, Bart has some amazing reflections on the entire story, and he shares them with us here in the interview. Plus, of course, tons and tons more. It's moon hoax mania here on Benal of America Audio this week. Stick around. It's going to be a wild one. Bart Sibrel's the guest. If you're unfamiliar with Bart Sibrel, let me give you a little bit of background on him. Bart Sibrel has been making movies for 20 years, during which time he has owned three television production companies and worked for two of the three major networks. His national credits include films for NBC, Fox, CNN, the Nashville Network, Lifetime, and BET. His top awards from the American Motion Picture Society include Best Cinematography and Best Editing. He's made four films about the moon hoax, and they are A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Moon, Astronauts Gone Wild, Apollo 11 Post-Flight Press Conference, and Apollo 11 Monkey Business. You can find out more information on Bart Sibrel and his films at www.moonmovie.com. Without any further ado, let's rock and roll. This interview was recorded on September 21st, 2006. Bart Sibrel on Benal of America Audio, Season 2. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of Benal of America Audio. I want to welcome as our special guest this week, Bart Sibrel. He is the writer, producer, and director of A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Moon, also Astronauts Gone Wild, and he's got two other films, Apollo 11 Monkey Business and Apollo 11 Post-Flight Press Conference. These are all available on DVD. Fantastic films. The website is moonmovie.com. Bart Sibrel is, I'd say he's almost worldwide known as one of the biggest names in the moon hoax theory field. So, you know, I find moon hoax theory doesn't get enough coverage out there. Some people don't believe it. Some people, they're very adamant about it one way or the other. And it's a very interesting topic. It's part of the esoteric field. I want to give fair representation to everything out there. And especially when you can get somebody like Bart Sibrel, who's tops in the field of moon hoax research. So let's rock and roll and let's do it. Bart Sibrel, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tim, for having me.
Let's start out first with your background, your bio, how you got into what your life was like before you started unearthing the moon hoax.
Well, probably from the age of 8 to 14, I was one of the biggest fans of the moon missions. I had a whole bedroom wall covered with pictures of the first moon landing. I thought it was the greatest thing. My father was in the Air Force. I constantly hung around aircraft and aircraft museums and things like that. Mm-hmm. I was a big fan of aviation, and to me, this was the greatest achievement of aviation.
Yeah.
And then when I was about 14 years old, I was watching a syndicated news magazine program, and they had on the show this gentleman who worked for the space program from about 1963 to 1968 during the development of the Apollo rocket.
Yeah.
And he asserted quite confidently that the moon missions were, number one, impossible, and then, number two, falsified as a Cold War bluff to get the Soviets to thinking we were more advanced than we really were.
Yeah.
Well, at age 14, I'm pretty open-minded still, and so I think, oh, I never heard that before. I wasn't insulted or anything, and after the show, I went to my bedroom wall and started looking at the pictures, wondering, is this a children's studio or is it a real landscape? And sure enough, there were indicators that made it look like a television studio, like the foreground would be one color and then the background would be another color, and they often changed colors left to right in a horizontal line. Sometimes, like the gentleman pointed out, the shadows, which should always run parallel with one another if they're solely lit by the sun, as NASA claims, the sun being 92 million miles away and a million times bigger than the Earth, and no atmosphere on the moon, makes the lighting there about 20 times brighter than it would be on Earth in a desert.
Oh, wow.
So they have no need for flash photography or lighting kits. So all shadows, if you go outside, you know, at noon on a cloudless day, you'll notice that your shadow and your friend's shadow, they always run parallel with one another. They never intersect if they're lit by the sun. Well, in a couple of these pictures, you know, they intersect as much as 90 degrees. And you can see an example of this at moonmovie.com where, you know, we have 90-degree converging shadows. And I'm a filmmaker. So my job as a filmmaker is to make fake scenes look real.
Yeah.
Well, 10 years after I saw this television program, and it's kind of been in the back of my head all this time, did we really go or did we not go? I became a filmmaker, and I was editing one day for the gentleman who actually produced that show 10 years earlier.
Oh, wow.
And I said, do you remember the guy who said we didn't go to the moon? No, but called the San Francisco office. I did. They said they were just days away from deleting all 10-year-old files.
Oh,
so
wow.
I almost didn't find the guy. And tracked him down, and he suggested that I do a film about it. So I started doing the research, you know, found out the thing about the shadows, and also found out that two of the three astronauts never give interviews, you know, two of the three. The first man who walks to the moon says no to everybody when they ask him for an interview. Another guy on the same mission always says no to interviews. You know, the only guy who talks about it on that first mission is Buzz Aldrin, who's had, you know, some emotional problems everyone knows along the way. Then, you know, Tricky Dick Nixon was president at the time. Then the administrator of NASA, James Webb, the highest-ranking civilian employee of an alleged civilian program, resigns without explanation days before the first Apollo mission. And the Soviets, they launched the first satellite, the first animal, the first man, the first woman, the first spacewalk, the first crew of three, the first of two spacecraft at the same time. For every 100 hours we spent in space, they spent 500 hours.
Wow.
They were so much more advanced. Of course, this is during the Cold War, the nuclear scare, is Sputnik 3 going to have a nuclear missile on it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the way I look at it is, you know, Kennedy, after the Soviets had launched the first satellite, the first animal, and then put their man up, the first time the Soviets put a man into space, he orbited the Earth 20 times. A few weeks later, desperate to try to do something, we put a man up, and he goes, I think, from the west coast or the east coast to the west coast and splashes down. Doesn't even orbit the Earth one time. A few days later, Kennedy, who's a visionary, not a scientist, says, let's go to the moon before the end of the 60s, before December 31st, 1969. And they, of course, are claimed to have gone within 5% of that deadline. Well, I figure, you know, when he became a martyr, all of his goals, including civil rights, legislation, all these things were, you know, passed through as a way of kind of honoring his memory. Well, he had made this great boast. He even said so, that he makes this boast in front of the world, in front of the Soviets, in front of the Americans, in front of the Chinese, that we will go to the moon. And America is a very prideful nation. And what happened, I believe, is during the Johnson's administration, they found out that they could not go to the moon for a number of reasons. The rocket wasn't nearly large enough. There's radiation, the Van Allen radiation belt, which we can go into. And they started developing the scenario for faking going to the moon. The way I look at it, it's kind of like a poker game.
Yeah.
We've got two twos and they've got three threes, and we bet $500,000 to get them to back off. I also think that's one of the reasons why he didn't run for re-election, is because he knew they were going to fake the moon landings. And who knew that would work? might work, might not work. You know,
yeah.
If it didn't work when you were in the seat of authority, boy, that would be something to be remembered by historically, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And so he was only one of two incumbent presidents who did not run for re-election in the history of America. I think that was largely the reason. Nixon came along. They inform him of this plan to fake the moon landing 6 months after he's in the office. And apparently he gave his okie dokie because they did it. And what people have to understand, you know, going to the moon and orbiting the Earth are completely different in intricacy and difficulty. The space shuttle only goes as high above the Earth as Florida is wide. So if you had a globe about like a foot across, like in school,
yeah,
that would be about a half an inch above the globe.
Oh,
the
wow.
moon would be 30 globes away or 30 feet away.
Wow.
So what we're claiming is that they went 100,000% farther than the space shuttle has ever gone nearly four decades ago with less computing power than in my Walmart watch. And the space shuttle going 200 miles above the Earth has already killed 14 people. And yet we're to believe that nearly four decades ago, with that much older technology and experience and ability, they went 250,000 miles away, six times, landed on another world, and never killed anybody. That they were able to go from a standstill on the moon to 4,000 miles an hour in a complete vacuum with no aerodynamic capability and perfectly synchronized with the command module, even though computers would just be incredibly slow. And I doubt seriously could make those calculations. And, you know, you have to wonder, why is it that we had such capability back then and we do not have the same capability now? You know, Lindbergh flew across the Atlantic in 1928. Do you think it would be 50 years before someone flew across the Atlantic again?
Yeah.
They're saying we can return to the moon 50 years after going the first time. And their alleged new rocket is called Apollo on steroids, meaning the rocket that now that we need has to be so much bigger than the rocket we successfully went to the moon back then. You know, the administration said some interesting things. He said, you know, maybe when we return to the moon, we can find stuff in the soil that we can use as fuel. Well, we were there six times. You know, I don't know that we're going to find anything new. Then they said, going to the moon is a logical first step to Mars and beyond. Okay, then why do we need to repeat it a seventh time?
Yeah.
And he said, well, we need to be able to learn how to protect the astronauts from radiation. Well, just do it the same successful way you did it before. Von Braun, who designed the rocket, originally said to make it in one rocket to the moon, the rocket had to be taller than the Empire State Building and weigh 800,000 tons. The rocket they used weighed no more than 6,500 tons. That's a difference of about 30,000%.
Wow.
He said repeatedly, in every book you can find from the age, you have to have a space station built first before you can go to the moon. And you know what the administration says? Once we finish building the space station, then we'll be able to return to the moon. Well, then how did they get to the moon in the first place? And then that doesn't even mention the fact that there's this huge field of radiation starting at 1,000 miles up and extending 25,000 miles called the Van Allen Radiation Belt that no human has ever gone through except allegedly going to the moon. I mean, since 1972, no country, not the Soviet Union, not China, not Japan, not Great Britain, no one has ever claimed to set a human beyond Earth orbit. And, you know, we begin to wonder why, and I think it's because of this radiation field.
Yeah.
When the space shuttle went up to their highest altitude about 15 years ago, they were 650 miles below the beginning of the field of radiation. And the radiation was so severe, they could see it with their eyes closed, the sparks of light hitting the retinas of their closed eyes.
Oh, wow.
They descended to a lower altitude, and CNN issued a report that said, quote, the radiation belt surrounding the Earth is more dangerous than previously believed. Now, this is simply them getting up to 365 miles. So how can it be that they know the radiation belt better at 365 miles than they did when they went through it six times to the moon and back?
Yeah.
How can it be more dangerous than previously believed when you know, we went through it six times. People don't put this together. And what we have is this psychological predisposition to believing that the moon landings were authentic because we wanted to believe them.
Yeah.
Everyone wanted to believe it.
Now, to backtrack a little bit, I'm sure you probably know this sort of thing. How did the moon hoax theory even begin in the first place? Like you said, you saw this program when you were a kid. Where exactly did the entire idea come from? Now, I understand Bill Kasing had some book that came out in 74 that was sort of the first real shot in the moon hoax theory canon, if you will. Tell me a little bit about the origins of the moon hoax theory. I'm sure you've heard
of
it.
Well, I would say he is definitely the, you know, grandfather of the moon landing hoax.
Mm-hmm.
There was a Knight Ridder poll done in 1969. I think they polled probably 1,250 people, something like that. And at that time, there were 10% of Americans, you know, adults holding down, you know, jobs that thought the moon landings were fake. They just somehow sensed that this was more than mankind could achieve.
Yeah.
You know, the general public was watching Star Trek and Beam Me Up, and they really didn't know that there was any difference between orbiting the Earth and going to the moon. I mean, most people probably don't even realize that the space shuttle only goes as high as Florida is wide. And they don't realize the great vast distance between that and the moon and the radiation belt and all this. I would say, aside from there being 10% of the public who was skeptical right off the bat, Bill Kasing and his book called We Never Went to the Moon really got the thing going. And his book inspired the film Capricorn One, which I believe was released in 1978. And that was about a fake Mars landing. They didn't want to make a movie about a fake moon landing because that would be a little bit too offensive or deliberate or whatever.
Yeah.
So they made a film about a fake Mars landing. Interesting thing on the back of the sleeve, if you can find this film, Capricorn One, is it boasts that it's the only space film in the history of filmmaking ever produced with the cooperation of NASA.
Oh, wow.
So, wait a minute. The only space film, not 2001 A Space Odyssey, not Star Wars, the only space film that NASA cooperated with, went out of their way to do anything with, was a film about a fake space mission. Well, I guess what they were doing is simply reverse psychology. I mean, what better way to diffuse this film than for them to welcome the crew with open arms and say, sure, you can shoot on our premises and shoot everything. It doesn't matter. Sure, you know, to try to diffuse it. It's just that America is so prideful and, you know, science in a way is a religion. I mean, scientists killed George Washington. He had a virus, he had a cold, and they said, well, we know best. We need to bleed that cold out of you. Well, just because someone is a scientist, that doesn't necessarily mean they know all that's going on.
Yeah.
So science, to me, is a religion. I mean, no scientist really wants to jump off the train and be a rebel and say, hey, I think we didn't go to the moon. People are psychologically predisposed to wanting to believe what the government tells them. If they say we went to the moon, I mean, who are we to doubt them? And to tell you the truth, we really didn't have a reason to doubt them aside from JFK.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why doubt it? I mean, it sounds so outrageous. The government faked the moon landing and all done in a television studio. I mean, it sounds kind of nutty. And, you know, one of the first questions that I came to mind was, you know, how can you fool all these people? You have 100,000 people working on the space program in all these departments. Well, the thing is departmentalized. The right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. The
yeah.
person who makes the glove, the door, and the boot, by the time they went on the rocket, you know, they were on the rocket. They went up, which was no small accomplishment, now or then. But once they went up, there were only three eyewitnesses of three government employees and a TV picture completely controlled by the federal government. And everyone else wanted to believe it. I mean, any scientist, no matter what degree of science that they're in, they're kind of feeling in their hearts that they're part of, you know, going to the moon, part of that great accomplishment. Whether you're a mathematician or civil engineer or whatever, they kind of feel like that's my club. We went to the moon.
Yeah.
Trying to tell them otherwise is just, you know, trying to tell them that, well, their mother was an axe murderer before you were born. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Like, no, she baked me cookies. No. And it's a real big psychological barrier
yeah.
to think that the government would be so wicked, so deceitful, so have such chutzpah, you know, to
yeah.
do such a thing.
Yeah. Now, from what I understand, there seems to be some countries out there in the world actually go along with the moon hoax theory as fact. Now, I'm not sure. Maybe you can clear this up. Now, it says I've heard in various places Cuba and China both teach that that there was no moon landing, that it was fake. Is that true, or is that just an urban legend?
No, I think that is true. I think both of those things are true. Faking the moon landings had multifaceted benefits. I guess number one, the main benefit was domestic. It employed a lot of people. It was a great pep rally during the Vietnam War. I mean, second to the Civil War, I would say the Nixon administration had more civil unrest than at any other time in American history than, you know, of course, the Revolution originally.
Yes.
And this was just something to distract people, to give us something to take pride in, something good to feel America about, other than, you know, people dying in the Vietnam War and civil rights and economic upheaval. So there was that benefit. And I suspect they really did want to fool the Soviets into thinking that we were more advanced than we really were. In 1994, the General Accounting Office revealed that the Star Wars Missile Defense Program rigged tests to make it seem more advanced than it really was. I'm quoting them. The aim was to fool the Soviet Union about U.S. strategic capability during the Cold War. So that was another reason to fool the Soviets during the Cold War into thinking we have equal or greater capability. Now, it is possible through espionage that the Soviet Union or China or Israel found out that we didn't go to the moon. And then, of course, there's another obvious question. Well, why didn't they just blurt it out? Well, if I had a picture of a president with a prostitute, I could give it to the media or I could ask him for $500 million.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think when and if these countries found out that the moon landings were fake, they thought that through. We could blurt it out and then it'll be useless, or we can blackmail each administration after each administration. Why does China, after they roll over their own people with tanks, get most favored nation trading status all the time? And other seemingly contradictory relationships with other countries.
Yeah.
I think their espionage does. They did find out. They do know. And they're probably blackmailing the United States.
Okay, now what do you say to you've done a really good case here for laying out the moon hoax theory. What do you say to the critics, the skeptics of the moon hoax theory? If anyone who's listened to Esoteric Radio as long as I have has heard the moon hoax debates on various shows, I think even you've been a part of some of those, where it's very often like tit for tat. You know, you say one thing and then they'll sort of try and debunk it with their own take on the whole thing. What do you say to the people that are just as fastidious about the details in this thing as you are and say that you're on the wrong side of this argument?
Well, I have a friend who gives me advice about my interviews that I do, and he doesn't like this analogy of me using it, but I do. I'm going to try it one more time.
All right, go for it.
You know, I don't know if OJ was guilty or not. His own lawyers alluded or suggested that he was. Mm-hmm. If you try to tell his children that daddy killed mommy, you know, he has custody of his children. It was proven in a civil court that he was responsible for their deaths, and yet he got custody of his kids. But if you try to tell his kids that daddy killed mommy, they just won't see it. And that's the American citizenry. There are people I know who have traveled and met with people from the Soviet Union, and they say the only people who think we went to the moon are the Americans. So there's this predisposition for it. You know, during the O.J. Simpson trial, no matter what evidence came forward to prove his guilt, there was always a reason. You know, it's like no matter how much the shadows intersect or how deadly the radiation is, there's always some explanation to say we went to the moon anyway.
Yeah.
Because people see what they're looking for. And the way I look at it, Tim, is if we really went to the moon, then anyone who says otherwise is an idiot. So, I mean, if you're people, I naturally, you know, go to moonmovie.com and see it for yourself. I mean, research it for yourself.
Absolutely. That's what we tell everybody.
But if you typed in moon hoax on Google, the first 15 that come up, and there's money behind this, okay, we know that, to be the first 15 in Google. Mm-hmm. You know, the first 15 are defending that the moon landings are real. Even though you type in moon hoax, the first 15 things that come up say, no, we really went, no, we really went, no, we really went, no, we really went, no, we really went.
Yeah.
Shakespeare once said, thou dost protest too much.
Mm-hmm.
If we really went to the moon, anyone who says otherwise is an idiot. So why are there so many websites that took thousands of hours to write and construct and promote defending the allegedly so obvious moon landings, if they're so obvious, to a bunch of idiots? Because there is something to defend. You know, when I got punched by Buzz Aldrin, it was because I walked up to him and asked him to swear on the Bible that he walked on the moon. And he had his entourage with him. His, you know, people who travel with him who think he's a god and think he walked on the moon. And, you know, if I walked on the moon and anyone who thought otherwise, I would think that was hysterical. If I walked on the moon and everybody who went to the moon walked on the moon and there were people running around saying it's all done in a TV studio, I would just find that hysterical.
Yeah.
And if someone asked me to swear on a Bible, I would say, sure, I'll swear on a Bible. You need me to swear on two Bibles? You want me to do it again for you? You feel okay? You need a doctor? But he got angry. It was as if I walked up to him in front of his wife and said, so, how's your mistress doing? You see, anger, you know, like that comes from pulling a skeleton out of the guy's closet. I mean, you yourself saw from the clip of the press conference, their one and only press conference, these three guys. I mean, you've seen the locker room after the Super Bowl, the World Series, right? You
yeah.
cannot wipe the smile, the grins, the glee off anyone's face.
Exactly. Yeah.
These three guys, allegedly against all odds, did the impossible, and they come back, and for an hour and a half, every single second of the press conference, it looks like they're at a funeral. There are scowls on their faces. They don't want to answer the questions. And by the way, they have secret teleprompters hidden on that table, too. They're prompting them. If you really went to the moon, I think you'd probably remember, you know, all the details. I don't think you need a little secret teleprompter hidden in the desk to give you the answers to the questions, but that's what they had going on. They knew what they'd done was wrong, and they felt terrible about it. And they were forced to do it anyway, and you can see it in their manner and in their expressions. They look terrible. I mean, we even have a clip at moonmovie.com. Click on the press conference, and you can see their awkwardness and the strangeness that's going on. And, you know, the way I look at it, Tim, is if they could go to the moon, that would have a certain level of significance to mankind. Let's say you could
yeah.
land on another world and plant a flag, and yay, that was the greatest technological achievement since the Titanic.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that would have a certain level of significance historically to mankind and the history of the human race. Now, if you couldn't go, and you made a boast nationally, and you were so humiliated that you couldn't do it, that you falsified it, that you cheated, that you lied, that you embezzled billions of dollars, that you murdered people to make it go down, that you to this day are holding on to the lie, holding on to the lie. You see, Tim, that's more profound of an event than if they had actually gone. I was doing the film under the theory it might be true. All the evidence I've told you so far, I figured they probably went, but there's at least a 1 out of 4 chance they didn't. And I thought, that's too big, too big. So I started producing the film, and as you know, we stumbled upon some never-before-seen footage, you know, behind-the-scenes footage of them faking a shot. And when you see it, I mean, there's no explanation. I mean, it's like finding the Zapruder film last week. I mean, we found footage of them faking a particular shot of the mission. That means they never left Earth orbit. And it dawns on you that the faking of the moon landing is actually more significant of an event than if they had actually gone. And when people look into it and they study it, they realize this is really true. They really didn't go to the moon. And what we have then is one of the greatest events in human history is the faking of the moon landing out of pride and out of fear of what the other person will think of you.
Wow, that's some profound stuff. Now, amongst the moon hoax theory community, there seems to be a few different camps as far as what exactly went down. And I've been able to discern three key ones here. Maybe you can talk about them. And you obviously subscribe to the middle one. Let me run through them. First of all, of course, is the no flight at all, that they never even left the Earth at all and produced the whole thing, you know, in a Hollywood studio and there was no flight. Version number 2 is the one that you subscribe to, which would be a low Earth orbit, and I believe, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then the last one is a full flight to the moon. They landed on the moon, but they faked pictures to cover up something else, aliens, alien artifacts, or, you know, a Russian flag, who knows. But, you know what I mean. So there's three schools of thought. Maybe I missed one. Maybe you can tell me a different one that I haven't caught here, but those are the no flight, the low Earth orbit flight with the whole fakery of the landing, and then a landing with the fakery of the pictures. Can you extrapolate on those a little bit and why you prefer the one, the center one, the low Earth flight, over the no flight and the full flight with the fake pictures?
Yeah, there's the old razor, you know, principle, which says the simplest explanation is likely true.
Mm-hmm.
The simplest explanation isn't that they went. No, the simplest explanation is that they faked it. Because which is more difficult? To actually fly to the moon in 1969 or to do it in a television studio? It's much easier to pretend to go to the moon. I can pretend to be on the moon right now. It's much easier to pretend to be on the moon than it would be to go to the moon.
Yeah.
And in regard to the third point, you know, the government puts out a lot of interesting misinformation sometimes. There's like the Kecksburg, Pennsylvania UFO thing. I think the government is so clever, and they only get better. You know, if you rob banks successfully and you keep getting away with it, you get better and better.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes less time to get more money. And as the government got away with the moon landing hoax, they are, number one, emboldened to do more. And that's another good reason for the truth to come out. And then they have these multiple layers. They have like the what really happened, you know, like with Kecksburg may have been that they shot down a Soviet spy satellite. They didn't want the Soviet Union to know, so they wouldn't change their codes. So they leak out accidentally but deliberately this juicy morsel that it's really a UFO. And they send people down this path. You know, the fact is that a lot of people who believe and UFOs are high intelligent intellectuals. And if they can convince them that we really went to the moon, but the pictures are fake because there's alien bases there or something else, it still gets a whole group of intelligent people to believe we went to the moon when the simple fact is we did not. Bill Kaysing originally subscribed to the first, and that's why Capricorn 1 appears this way, that right before the liftoff, you know, they take the guys out and they weren't on the rocket. Well, we know that not to be true for two reasons. Number one, let's say they took them off the rocket, then it launches, and then it blows up on the launch pad like the Challenger did.
Yeah.
Well, then what do you do with the three guys? You know, you have to execute them. I mean, and no one wants to deal with that. It'd be better to just, you know, kill two birds with one stone and put them on the rocket. Plus, they get to go up in front of witnesses.
Yeah.
And getting real zero-gravity footage is very convincing and extremely difficult to fake. So they put them into Earth orbit so they could get the peanut butter sandwich floating by, and that looks very real.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, they could also splash down, you know, in front of witnesses. But the main point that we know, the second explanation to be true, is because of the newly discovered footage. We have a shot of them, and you can see a clip of it at moonmovie.com, of them faking a shot of being halfway to the moon. But the faking of it occurs in Earth orbit. It's one of the few fake shots that the astronauts actually did themselves through a little special effect technique that they did inside of the spacecraft.
Yeah.
Now, this proves that they were on the rocket. And we, you know, I've seen the zero gravity footage, and it's the real deal. I mean, I'm a filmmaker for 20 years. I've been asked to testify in court whether footage is authentic or not, or been altered. And this is the real deal. I mean, I can't fake Neil Armstrong's 35-year younger face in zero gravity. So we know they're in Earth orbit, but the fact is they did not leave Earth orbit. And at the beginning of each shot where they are allegedly halfway to the moon, you know, Neil Armstrong asks NASA something very interesting. He says, well, how far out from the Earth do you have us? Well, he's got the best computer on the planet, you know, right in front of him. So he knows exactly how far away from the Earth he is. He's about 200 miles away from the Earth. But all the computer guys down at NASA were receiving a simulation flight program. The flight director only admitted last year that the ground crew could tell no difference between a simulation and an actual flight. And he didn't want to contradict their data. So when they said, oh, we have you 130,000 miles out, then for the shot he says, all right, this is Neil Armstrong calling in for 130,000 miles out. I mean, why did he need to ask how far out he was when the information's right there in front of him, unless he didn't want to contradict the computer program? So this newly discovered footage, which I showed to Bill Kaysing, he agreed that, yes, they were on the rocket. And so, you know, I'm 100% sure that that was the case.
Okay, and you don't subscribe then, obviously, to the idea that they made it there but had to cover it up because there's aliens or alien ships.
No, the fact is, if 10% of the people at that time thought it was fake and in a television studio, they would never fake any shot if they really went. Let's say they really went to the moon and they dropped, you know, a canister of film and it broke open and it was ruined. They would never fake the shot, knowing that there was a large group of people, you know, millions of people who doubted it was real. They would never fake it when they really went, because it could come back and bite them.
Yeah.
And the fact is, you know, if you really went, you wouldn't have to fake any of it. It's very simple. You know, we have them faking a shot of being halfway to the moon. And that simply means they could not go halfway. And if the first crew, Apollo 11, cannot go halfway, then none of them can, because they had identical equipment. It simply means they, none of the missions ever left Earth orbit. None of them ever went to the moon. None of them even orbited the moon. Apollo 10 allegedly orbited the moon, and yet in this footage we uncovered, we have them clearly saying this is the same way Apollo 10 did it, meaning that Apollo 10 didn't leave Earth orbit either. No time has a human ever left Earth orbit, unless the Soviets did it and the guy died and they didn't report it because they were too embarrassing. Too embarrassed because of the loss.
All right. Okay. There's also a lot of rumors sort of that have floated around over the years of Stanley Kubrick and his involvement with the moon hoax. What can you say about those theories, about those rumors, and is it, what kind of evidence is out there to that, those sort of rumors, and do you even pay them much credence?
Well, you know, see, now we have an hour. I don't mind going into it.
First of all,
I just, again, highly encourage people to research it at moonmovie.com, look at the evidence, decide for themselves. Now, my personal opinion about that, I'd be glad to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is, the moon landings were fake. And I always think, you know, when you have an adversary, well, what would I do if I were them, right?
Yeah.
If I were them, I would have two choices. Okay, you have to have fake moon photography, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have two choices. You either hire the general of the media department at the Pentagon and get great security and amateur results, or you hire the best filmmaker on the planet, get the short-term benefit of great-looking footage, and worry about security later.
Yeah.
That had to have been the choice that they made. What a coincidence that Stanley Kubrick, around that time, was making a film about what? Going to the moon. It is an absolute fact that the flight director visited the set of 2001 A Space Odyssey during its filming. Kubrick was, you know, in my opinion, the best filmmaker at the time. He was shooting a film about going to the moon. There's some other little interesting things. His last film was called Eyes Wide Shut. I always thought, you know, that that title in itself meant something. I mean, you look at me, who from the age of 8 to 14, that's 6 years, I have the evidence that we didn't go to the moon right in front of me. I mean, I have all these pictures of the shadows intersecting, of the backdrops, you know, being a different color than the foreground, and I never saw it. Yeah. My eyes were wide shut. Well, he stipulated contractually that that particular film be released on a particular date.
Mm-hmm.
And the studio didn't know why, and it was on a Wednesday, I think, and normally films are released on a Friday, but it's like, you know, who cares? If it makes him happy, we'll put it in the contract. Well, you know, he died before the film was released, and because it was in a contract, it was released on the day that he wanted it to.
Yeah. Look
at this. Eyes Wide Shut debuted on the 30th anniversary of the alleged moon landing, July 20th, 1999.
Huh.
In the film, The Shining, the little red rum boy, right? Remember him?
Yep.
He comes up to his mommy or daddy in one of the scenes, and guess what his T-shirt says?
What's that?
Apollo 11. You know, all I can say is, you know, there's a lot of circumstantial evidence that, yes, he did have something to do with it. There's even more. His film after that, after 2001 A Space Odyssey, was called Barry Lyndon.
Yeah.
It was the first film in the history of film production that was all shot with natural or practical lighting. Meaning there was no single electric light bulb used in the entire film.
Wow.
They used maybe reflectors or something when they're outside, and they used candlelight because it took place, you know, in the 18th century, allegedly.
Yeah.
And so they used candlelight. Well, in order to expose the film at that time, which was a mediocre quality film, they needed a particular type of lens, a quote, fast lens. And he got this particular lens that was developed by guess who?
Who's that?
NASA. And I suspect that this was part of his negotiation for doing the moon landing, the first one. I suspect he only did the first one and then kind of taught them how to do it, or they felt like they could take it from there or whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, he probably did have something to do with it. You know, somebody had to shoot it, and he seemed like the prime candidate. And there's all this innuendo in a lot of his projects and a lot of what was going on that suggested that he did.
Now, did anybody ever ask him up front if he had any role in the creation of the moon hoax?
Not on the record. Upon his death in 1999, I remember I had AOL at the time, and logging on, and the news page said, Stanley Kubrick dead at the age of 70. His family says, quote, there were no suspicious circumstances involving his death. I'm like, that's an interesting thing to volunteer.
Yeah.
Kind of like being pulled over for speeding and saying, I didn't have anything to do with that bank robbery.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, it's like, why would they say such a thing? It was as if maybe he was retired before he could speak. Yeah. And his family knew it, and they wanted it to stop there and go no further. So they wanted to, you know, show their cooperation. Yeah, you know, nothing suspicious, okay? We're playing ball now, okay?
Yeah.
A lot of the astronauts dropped dead, you know, until I hit the scene and brought this to a lot of people's attention. A lot of them hit the graveyard right at 70 or 69. I mean, it was very consistent. Died at 70, died at 70, died at 69, died at 70. It was as if, you know, they didn't want to kill people right away. They wanted them to retire to a ripe old age, and maybe in the 60s, 70 was considered a ripe old age.
Yeah.
I mean, right now, people have asked me, am I in danger? Was I ever in danger or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got the hem of the garment. The astronauts, you see, they know everything.
Yeah.
They know where it was done. They know why it was done. They know how it was done. They know who did it. They know everything. They're the ones who are in danger. And I've let them know this off the record. You know, don't think you're going to die of old age and just kind of drift away into the afterlife. They're keeping an eye on you, guys. You know, all the astronauts' deaths have always been sudden. No one has cancer and chemotherapy and time to contemplate the meaning of life.
Yeah.
In fact, James Irwin from Apollo 15, you know, before I hit the scene, Bill Casing was the leading guy. He was on Oprah begging people to believe we didn't go to the moon. And, you know, one day he gets a phone call from one of the astronauts. Now, you've seen Astronauts Gone Wild, mm-hmm. and so I've been kind of tracking down all the astronauts. You can imagine my surprise. I pick up the phone one day after it rings, and it's one of the astronauts calling me.
Yeah.
Well, that happened to him. And I think it was 1990, I think in 1991 or something like that,
mm-hmm.
He got a call from James Irwin. And James Irwin said he'd become a born-again Christian. And that they needed to have a serious talk about his book, We Never Went to the Moon.
Yeah.
He said he was concerned for his security and said, why don't you call me at this number 3 days from now? 3 days later, James Irwin had a fatal heart attack.
Wow.
Yeah. Think about that.
Yeah, that's
you know, so Bill's phone was bugged, or the astronauts, or both, or whatever. And, you know, they weren't going to let that guy. And they're... You know, 3/4 of these people are alive. And, you know, they were in good health back then. That's why they got hired for the job. So most of them have maintained that health pretty well. So they're going to, you know, they're going to be around for at least 10 more years. But that sand is drifting out of the hourglass. And somebody's got to be afraid of a deathbed confession or memoirs or whatever. I mean, can you imagine those astronauts? I mean, their wives don't know. For their own protection. Their children don't know. Their priests don't know. They have to carry on this burden that this is how they're introduced. Maybe some love it. Maybe some, it, you know, sours their heart and stomach every time it comes up.
Yeah. Now,